Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. There's no escaping it. Valentine's Day is upon us, my friends. And I'm dedicating this episode of The Spot to those of you out there who are less than enthused that the holiday is back again. So I'm burning the flowers and leaving the chocolates to melt in the sun, and I'm gifting you some radiotherapy instead. When I think of Valentine's Day, there's one clip of media that comes to my mind instantly. It features one of my favorite television heroines, Liz Lemon from NBC's 30 Rock.
I'll buy some cookies, but not for Valentine's Day. Instead, these cookies celebrate the February 14th birthday of Anna Howard Shaw, famed American suffragette.
I bring this up every Valentine's Day since the episode aired, like a badge of feminist honor. And I thought, what a fitting way to kick off a Valentine's Day show than with a history lesson on Anna Howard Shaw. From WKAR in East Lansing, Michigan, here's an excerpt from the culture and news show Current State, led with journalist Scott Pohl.
This is the story of Anna Howard Shaw. She was born in England in 1847, and her family moved to America. She grew up in Michigan. After an isolated farm upbringing, Shaw enrolled at Albion College, which became a springboard to a life as a minister, in medical studies, in Boston, and ultimately to work in the reform movements of that era. Shaw served as vice president of the National American Women's Suffrage Association in the 1890s and was the association's president from 1904 to 1915. Albion College professor Tricia Franzen has written a biography of this remarkable woman. It's called Anna Howard Shaw, The Work of Woman Suffrage. Franzen says Shaw's career trajectory was unusual for her day.
It was, and I think the thing that was even more unusual was that she was self-supporting this whole time. She had been contributing to her family's support from the time she was 12 because her father was a sort of intellectual dreamer who never quite got the hang of farming. And so she had to pick it up. She also was the one who supported the family while the men went off to fight in the Civil War. But she found that she was being called, or she felt she was being called. And as many of the women who went into the ministry very early, they felt that, God was calling them and they didn't need to pay attention to mere mortal men. So that was sort of her way of leaving, whether it was some balance between the actual vocational call and a real serious ambition.
What might have sparked her interest and her fervor in the suffrage movement, though? Was there anything in particular that might have set her on that path?
I think that her entire experience as a woman, as a girl even, that she saw, how unfair things were, and maybe even more was the experience of her mother, because her mother was a woman who had to pick up the pieces when her father, who was this sort of dreamer, made very impractical plans. So, the father had gone into business in England. It had gone bankrupt. He decided then that they had to pay off the debts and then they were going to come to the United States. Well, he left for the United States and left the family there. And she was the one who was working as a seamstress, raising these seven children for over a year before they could all get enough money to come to the U.S. And she saw again, her mother struggling when they moved to Michigan. And that's a pretty interesting story in itself about how the father and several of the older brothers stayed back in Massachusetts and the women of the family and one young son came to Michigan and they had to manage somehow.
Did she ever marry herself or have children?
Well, I argue that Shaw was way ahead of her time on many points, and one of them would be developing, for lack of a better term, an alternative family. She ended up partnering with Susan B. Anthony's niece, Lucy Anthony. Lucy was also essentially her business manager, and they lived together for over 30 years. During that time, and earlier even, Shaw had wanted to adopt children. She had tried to adopt when she was in medical school. She had also stepped in when her older sister died and left three young children. But what she ended up doing was she ended up really being part of an extended Anthony Shaw family that included nieces and nephews on both, you know, family sides. And so when she died, for example, she left certain bequests to her nieces. And then when Lucy died, because, of course, Anna had left most of her estate to Lucy, Lucy left bequests to both Anthony and Shaw nieces.
Anna Howard Shaw isn't well known. Those who have maybe heard of her think of her as Susan B. Anthony's protege or second banana, maybe. First of all, is that so from your perspective? And is it fair to think of her that way?
One of the reasons I wrote this book was because I so disagree with the way most historians have portrayed Shaw. And one of the problems that I faced was figuring out why Shaw had greater cultural currency before sort of the rise, you know, the last 40, almost 50 years of women's history than since. I have a lot of theories about that. But I think that what we really need to look at is what Shaw did and how Shaw did pick up where Anthony left off and but took the suffrage movement really into the mainstream. That period from like 1904 to 1910 was a struggle. There wasn't much happening. It felt like things were the doldrums. I think the doldrums really were around 1900 to 1904. By 1910, I think they had reached the turning point and that it just kept going from there. And part of that was because of Shaw and the fact that Shaw was in some ways far more a typical U.S. citizen than many of the other suffrage leaders. She came from, you know, a farming background. She had struggled. She had seen what most people did. She traveled constantly. She was constantly in touch with people. She knew what was going on in people's lives. She knew how to reach people. She was the orator of the movement.
I was going to bring up her skills as an orator, in a lot of ways, the public face of the movement with countless, maybe an exaggeration, hundreds, perhaps thousands of public speeches on behalf of the suffrage movement.
One scholar said that Shaw produced 15,000 speeches in the course of her 30 years. And I've fooled with these numbers because, like, I have her diary. I know where she talked, and I would say about 100 different places a year. But how many speeches she made, how many people she actually reached, it was large because then there was also the newspaper coverage whenever she spoke. Sometimes it was even international coverage, but she really was the face. And I think the other thing that I always want to mention is that Shaw was funny. She had a tremendous humor. She had a very different delivery than most of the other women speakers, particularly of that generation. And I think that this made her both entertainment as well as education when she spoke.
You've mentioned having access to her diary. What other source materials did you have to learn about her?
Well, there were certain documents that she held on to. Well, it was very fun to see her certification as a teacher in Mecosta County from the 1870s. So we had some documents from her early years. Of course, we had her autobiography. We had two biographies, one which was a dissertation Ralph Spencer wrote in 1970. There was also a biography, the Harper wrote, and it's kept at the University of Michigan. It's in one of their libraries. So there were all these documents and a lot of the letters, but many of the letters had been destroyed, which was really unfortunate. But there were many other suffrage letters at the, I really made the rounds with, you know, all the libraries and archives and Library of Congress and the Schlesinger Library at Radcliffe Institute at Harvard. And they also had a lot of photographs, and that was a lot of fun, too.
Having attended Albion College, does Albion College use her, so to speak, as a famous former student or alumnus?
The most important thing is that our Women's Center is named after Anna Howard Shaw. So, yes, we do use her. I wish all the students knew more about her, and we keep working on that, and I'm hoping this book really helps with that. But Albion was very important for Shaw. It was the place where she got her grounding, that she really knew that she had something that she could use to make a mark on the world. And from Albion, you know, she needed that confidence, because when she went to Boston University Seminary, it was not a good experience.
To what extent were race and class issues in the suffrage movement? It wasn't just whether women can get the right to vote.
Right. And I think that that is something that whenever we look at U.S. history, we always have to take into consideration. When Shaw became president, there were two women, Southern white women, who were on the board who were absolutely opposed to the Federal Amendment, never supported it. And they really blocked a lot of the efforts of the more progressive women to make an emphasis on the Federal Amendment. And Shaw has sometimes gotten some bad press because she forced a turnover on the board. Well, part of the turnover was that, you know, she tried to get rid of these women who were really blocking a universal suffrage. And as sort of an indicator is that in 1903, the National had a segregated conference in New Orleans. But, and then, you know, Shaw took over a year later. By 1912, W.E.B. Du Bois was the keynote speaker at the conference in Philadelphia. So I think that we see that there was a big shift during, and that Shaw doesn't get all the credit for it, but she does get some credit for it. And I think the same thing on the issue of class. You know, that until that time, it only was leisured women or women, privileged women, who could take on the leadership. But with Shaw, in a very interesting arrangement set up by Susan B. Anthony, was able to earn a salary as president of the National. And that meant that she, as a working woman, and several other working women were able to provide leadership. They reached out to working women, along with younger women and men, and I think really broadened the base of the suffrage movement.
So what sorts of things did Anna Howard Shaw do after she left the movement?
Well, after she left the actual office of the presidency, she continued to be part of that, but just not in the same kind of role. She was still traveling and speaking. But then as we got close to World War I, I argued that she was drafted. She was drafted by President Wilson and by members of his cabinet to head what is called the Women's Committee of the Council for National Defense, which coordinated all of the women's efforts during World War I on the domestic scene. And so she, along with Carrie Chapman Catt, Ida Tarbell, and many other women, got together, and they were supposed to work through the incredible networks that women had already by this point to coordinate things like food issues, food rationing, what we would call today recycling, all sorts of things that women were called upon to do to support the war effort. And then at the very end, she was the first woman to receive a Distinguished Service Medal for that effort. She also, in the last few weeks of her life, spoke at the first anti-lynching conference. She was then on the road with former President Taft to try to support the League of Nations.
Congress passed the 19th Amendment in 1919, and Anna Howard Shaw died shortly after that, so she didn't live to see the ratification of the 19th Amendment.
Well, she didn't live to see it, but, you know, we had that whole process where states were passing their suffrage amendments, and Shaw had transferred her residency to New York about the time that New York passed women's suffrage. And so at that point, and the New York passage was really the tipping point, because once that great big congressional delegation had women's suffrage on their agenda, then it was going to change. But Shaw probably got to vote in the New York elections, and that included a presidential election.
What a remarkable life.
It was a remarkable life. And really, I think that we need to understand Shaw and the role that she played in that. I think that hopefully a lot of the suffrage and sort of women's history will be reconsidered if we put Shaw back in.
The book is Anna Howard Shaw, The Work of Woman Suffrage, written by Albion College professor Tricia Franzen. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Scott. This was wonderful.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
If you'd like to hear more from the radio show Current State, you can subscribe to their podcast now on iTunes. Thank you. You're tuned into The Spot, KALW's weekly program that showcases the best stories from podcasts and independent radio producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. I want you to think about the last time you met someone. Romantically speaking, that is. Did you find each other through a dating app or website? Or how about through a job? Or maybe a mutual friend's barbecue? Maybe it was more unconventional than that. Maybe you met as pen pals and fell in love thousands of miles apart before ever meeting each other. I can vouch from personal experience that this can happen. And in the next story, two people meet each other in just as an unlikely way. And even though the next piece is radio fiction, I'd like to think it could actually be possible. From the podcast, The Truth, here's an improvised radio drama about Valentine's Day that even leaves a cynic like me holding a little ember of empathy for the holiday.
Happy Valentine's Day. Happy look at Triscuit. Triscuit.
Today's Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. You're my Valentine, right? You're my Valentine.
It gets to be a bit much with all the couples everywhere and candy out everywhere and cards and bears.
Flower.
But I have this tradition.
I'm gonna make a cake.
I make a coconut cake and then I go to a movie.
Where's my sugar?
It started like 7 years ago, okay. The last time I had a boyfriend on Valentine's Day.
Turn on the oven.
The first year it was actually a chocolate cake because Chad liked chocolate cake and he wanted to go see a movie. We went to see some stupid movie.
Eggs.
What was it?
Oh no. Oh, do I have eggs? Yes.
The next year, I had just broken up with him on New Year's. So I still made a cake, but I made a coconut cake.
This is not for you.
Because that's my favorite.
You don't like cake, Triscuit.
Nobody likes coconut cake. Chad hated coconut cake.
Get away, get away, get away. That is hot.
And I went to a movie that I chose.
Triscuit is the cat. Who's that cat? Triscuit is the... What is all over you? Oh, gross. What do you do all day? I'm coming. Hello?
Hello, I'm calling to speak with Elizabeth Kostek.
This is she?
Hi, Elizabeth. My name is Brian Privet.
Hello.
Hi, I am calling people I haven't met before on Valentine's Day to say hello.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Are you selling something?
No.
What is this?
Completely random. I picked your name out of a phone book, and I'm just calling to say hello. So, hello, I'm Brian.
There's something about talking to people I don't know that feels better than talking to people I do know on Valentine's Day. My friends, they've already heard it. They've heard it hundreds of times before that I'm alone. They don't need to hear it again.
Hello?
Hello, Pat? Pat Etchell?
Yeah?
Hi, my name is Brian Privet. And I guess it's a tradition now. This will be the third year that I've called people on the telephone who I don't know just to reach out and connect with someone.
How did you get my number?
I just picked it at random.
Random from where?
Oh, just the telephone book.
Why are you calling?
Some people don't want to talk on the phone.
No, thanks.
Sometimes it makes me feel worse.
I'm sorry, I just don't have time to talk to someone who's weird right now.
I understand it, but it doesn't feel good. But you'd be surprised. A lot of times I'm surprised by how many people will chat. And it's nice. It's a nice surprise.
So I appreciate it when somebody will listen to me.
Oh.
So that's why I listen to people when they call and talk to me.
Oh, well, that's good. I've never seen any of these people. I don't know what they look like, and I've definitely never met any of them. I don't want that, and I don't try to take it to that. I always look in the phone book, and same thing here. I just opened up the page, and it happened to be on the K's.
Yeah.
So, here we go. Elizabeth Kostek. All right, here we go, Elizabeth.
Okay, well, hello, Brian. That was very weird and interesting of you. Have a good night.
Jeff, it'll only take a moment.
I'm sort of busy right now. I'm making a cake.
What kind of cake are you baking?
I'm making a coconut cake. So good luck with your thing.
I like that. I love coconut cakes. I
had
one.
Now you're definitely a weirdo.
No, no. I had one for my birthday when I was 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ask for that or did your parents just do it?
I asked for it.
Really?
Definitely. I've always loved coconut on everything.
And I asked for it on my birthday and not everybody ate it. It didn't get finished and that was great because I got to eat it. What's the flavor on the inside?
Just white cake.
Yeah, that's good.
I feel like it sets off the coconut taste the best.
It is. That is the best. It's the best for coconut cake. Some people try chocolate in coconut cake.
I always want that to be better than it actually is.
Yeah, because it's moist, but it just doesn't go together.
Yeah, they don't work right.
The different kinds of creaminess.
Why am I talking to you?
Because it's nice to talk to someone, isn't it?
Is this how you pick people up?
No. No.
You do this, you call somebody, and then you're like, hey, come on, hey,
come on. It's not about that at all.
It's not about that at all.
No. No, I never meet the people face to face.
So you'll call people, but you won't meet them?
Never.
How do you know?
Oh, I didn't think of, maybe on accident I've met them. It's possible, I guess.
So you could accidentally meet somebody, but you just don't do it on purpose.
Right.
Like, if I was going to go to the movies, you could accidentally go to the same movie?
Yeah, if we accidentally, a few years from now, went to the same movie theater and I...
But what if later tonight I was going to go see The Princess Bride at the Biograph at 9:30?
Oh, no. I'm not trying to get a date out of this. This is just...
Why not? Are you scared? You sound scared.
I just called you on the phone. That would be weird if we met, wouldn't it?
That was just an offhand comment. You can do whatever you want. I just think it's weird that you call people and then are scared to actually meet them.
Well, okay. I think it's not that much stranger to ask somebody who you've just met on the telephone to come see a movie with you. You don't even know.
I know that that's what I did.
That's not why I'm doing this. I'm going to make some other calls after this. And.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
But, just so you know, 9:30.
Okay.
And I'm going to have a whole piece of coconut cake.
I hope you enjoy it.
Taxi!
Thank you.
No problem.
I am going to Greenwood and 47th.
Okay. That's the theater, right?
Yeah.
Go to the movies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you going to see?
I'm seeing The Princess Bride.
That's an old movie, right?
Yeah, they're showing it again for Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah? Date?
No.
No?
No, I'm maybe meeting a friend.
What do you mean?
Well, he might not be there. We've never met.
You never met the guy?
No, he just called me on the phone.
He called? How did he get your phone number?
Out of the phone book.
He picked your name out of a phone book and called you?
Yeah.
And then you told him where you're going to be?
Yeah.
That's bold.
I'm going to be in public.
Is this how you date?
No. It's not a date.
How many boyfriends you had before?
It's none of your business.
Okay, fair enough. I've had a lot of girlfriends.
I'm sure you have.
Guess.
Guess?
Yeah.
I don't know, 20.
It's a good guess.
You've had 20 girlfriends?
Those are girlfriends. Those are serious relationships. I've had dalliances with hundreds of women.
Oh. And this all works out for you? You're telling me this is the way I should be living?
It's working for me.
Your way sounds lonely to me.
Really?
Yeah.
But at least I'm with somebody.
At least I'm with somebody?
Yeah.
That's a great life philosophy.
Well, what's your life philosophy?
I don't know. See what happens next.
Can I help you?
Hi, I'd like to get one for Princess Bride.
It'll be $11.50.
Here you go.
Pardon, Elizabeth Kostick?
Yes.
Brian.
Are you okay? Hi.
Hi.
You knew me because of the cake.
Yeah, I thought about that after we got off the phone. I'm like, how will she know? And I'm like, well, she'll have cake.
Yeah, I brought cake.
Yeah.
This is all very weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot different than talking on the phone.
You don't look like I thought you'd look.
Oh, clothes, hair.
Yeah, you have clothes and hair, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, you too. I didn't
expect you to be blonde.
I don't know if my voice is blonde.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
I don't know.
Well, we should go in.
Oh, yeah, right.
So what happened to not meeting people that you called?
Coconut cake and Princess Bride. How could I...
You broke your rule.
Well, it's going pretty well so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's no food in the theater, ma'am.
It's just a piece of cake.
Yeah, she made it.
You'll have to take it outside.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't even think of that.
I mean, it's not like they sell cake. We're not going to buy...
You know what? I'm just going to throw out the cake, and we can just go in.
No. You spend so much time making it, and it looks great. It looks delicious.
Yeah, I sort of have this thing. I see a movie every Valentine's Day.
Well, maybe this will be a new tradition, getting kicked out of movie theaters for trying to bring in cake.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean...
We'll find a place where we can eat cake.
Okay.
All right.
That piece of radio drama is titled Eat Cake and was entirely improvised by the actors, Eliza Skinner, Birch Harms, and Curtis Gwen. It was edited by Hilary Frank and produced and directed by Jonathan Mitchell. It aired as an episode of the podcast, The Truth. And you can find out more about how it was made by visiting their website, thetruthpodcast.com. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look at the homepage for the little blue letters that spell out The Spot. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have some calls to strangers that I really should start making.
Happy Valentine's Day, no one!
Join me next Thursday, same time, for a whole new episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.